Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. In this episode, I have a conversation with a couple of people in the restaurant world that I think you will want to hear from. They are two of the women who are leading Underbelly Hospitality, the restaurant group behind Georgia James, Wild Oats, Underbelly Burger, and Comalito. Ladies, let me introduce you separately so people can hear your voices. Underbelly Hospitality President Nina Quincy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Underbelly Hospitality Beverage Director Sarah Dowling, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello.
You know, I always like to start these conversations with kind of a person's professional background, and I don't want to get too into Louise because you both have pretty extensive resumes. But Nina, why don't you start? Just give me the high points. Where did you work before you came to Houston and started working for Underbelly?
Well, my career jumped off in Vegas. I was 14 years there, primarily in nightlife, with a little bit of restaurants sprinkled in. So I was running all kinds of different entertainment venues. And then went to Nashville and was director of operations with Gaylord Opryland, running one of their iconic music venues, and then into hotels with Kimpton as food and beverage director in Philly at the Hotel Monaco, and then managing director for Arrive Hotels in Palm Springs and then Houston. So here we are.
You know, Sarah, I think you've had kind of a funny career because you've been kind of behind the scenes of a lot of places that we've talked about over the years. Field and Tides, Poutine, Theodore Rex, but again, just kind of hit the highlights for the path that led you to your current role.
Yeah. So my career for the most part has been all in Houston. I cut my teeth at the Chewy's on Westheimer and Kirby. And then I worked for the Liberty Kitchen Group for quite a few years between BRC, Liberty Kitchen, and the Heights. And then I did a 2-year stint as a resort manager in Belize. So that was a fun little side quest, if you will. And came back. Yeah, I did Field and Tides briefly, was with Poutine, and then Light Years for kind of the biggest chunk. And then from Light Years to Theodore Rex, and now with Underbelly.
Yeah, you were kind of the den mother of Light Years. You were kind of the person responsible for turning that from like a pretty good idea and a cool hang into like an actual business that like made money and worked and served people in a reasonable way.
Yes, that's honestly probably some of the most fun I've had in hospitality, especially because I didn't know Steve and John. They were, you know, these two awesome dudes from Long Island. And I didn't really know anything about kind of that whole side of the wine world and that much in depth about wine in general. And then just learning how to make wine more approachable and have conversations and not having the menus and things like that. I was very, when Steve and John first told me, like, we're not going to do menus, we're going to change it every day, we're going to do this. And I'm like, how the hell is that going to work? And then it became what it is, and it's a fun spot.
Yeah, Sarah, because if not for your involvement, like it could have become the petrol station of natural wine bars, right? Where it's like, if you know, you know, and if you don't know, go fuck yourself. So
yeah, that, it could have very easily become that. And I think, like, I give a lot of credit, honestly, to Steve for it not becoming that, because if you sit and have a conversation with that man, he wants everyone to feel comfortable and just vibe. Steve is the most vibiest human being I have ever met, and he runs on it. He very much wanted everyone to feel comfortable. He was like, I don't want to freak people out. A lot of that stuff is weird and it's different and it was all new to the market. He was like, I want people to feel comfortable in here. He's like, I never want to come off pretentious. And, you know, I feel like we executed that pretty well.
Yeah. And then, you know, you had a good run at Theodore Rex. What made coming to Underbelly to Georgia James and for a little while Pastore, which obviously we're going to talk about here in a minute. What made that seem like the right move for you?
Duh, me, Eric. Duh. I mean, yeah, honestly, opportunity to work with a hospitality group that's led by women. That is not something that you see very often, and not something that really exists in the wild very often. And the opportunity to do that and learn and grow with this incredible team was something that I did not want to pass up. Also, the opportunity to challenge myself, as a wine professional. I feel it's opened my mind to I've been able to bring my ethos of, kind of what the wine program was at Light Years and then at T-Rex, and bring those things and kind of the approachability and a little less, I guess, uptight approach to wine. I don't, I, I'm, and be, make it fun and approachable, even in a steakhouse setting. And that has been fun to kind of foster and grow.
Well, and Nina, I mean, Sarah mentions female leadership and underbelly hospitality, which, I still think there's probably a segment of people who still associate that group with Chris Shepherd, who obviously has been out now for quite a bit, coming up on 2 years almost. Chris writes for Culture Map. I've known Chris for a long time. I don't expect you to say anything bad about Chris, and I don't really want you to say anything bad about Chris, but talk to me about kind of taking over, leading that team through what must have been a difficult time when the founder suddenly decides that it's time for him to move on.
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult, because it didn't. I mean, there's nothing negative to say. There's no sordid tale of Julius Caesar happening here, right? Like it just it, and I think that everybody wanted that. Like people really wanted a sordid tale.
You will not believe the number of messages I got from people who were like, there's going to be a lawsuit, there's some huge scandal, there's going to be this, there's going to be that. And I talked to you, and I talked to Chris, and I talked to as many people as I could, and they were like people who actually knew what was going on, and they were like, no, he just made a decision that he wanted to make a change in his life, and he made that. But obviously you had restaurants that had to be run because there were people who were counting on for their livelihoods and investments that had been made, and you had to figure it out and keep moving.
Yeah, and it was, it was certainly a difficult time because between everybody wanting, some reality show style surprise, right? People were looking for the red wedding of Game of Thrones. Like that's what everybody wanted. And it wasn't that. And so being on this side of it was really difficult, because you're right. We were just like, we had just moved into the new Georgia James space. We had a lot of things that were rapidly coming as far as new openings. We had restaurants that were already open, so life had to go on for us. And sitting in my chair specifically was a little difficult because of the desire for a sordid tale. I definitely became, the scapegoat, and which is really funny because Chris didn't report to me. He was an owner. He was a founder. So there was nothing that I had no control in any of this, at all. But people kept looking for some sort of dirt and scoop. And I basically just went radio silent on social media for a long time and just tried to ignore everything, because it was ridiculous. And people are ugly and people are keyboard warriors, and there was no story to tell.
Right. So talk to me about the current state of the company now, right? With three kind of big restaurants plus a couple locations of Underbelly Burger. Like what do you want people to know? I mean, what should people know about kind of the current state of Underbelly hospitality?
It's amazing, man. Like the things that are happening right now are, I'm really excited. So, we have a new chef at Georgia James. We have for quite some time now. Coincidentally, somebody that Sarah worked with at T-Rex for a while. And, he's epically talented. And what he's doing there and some of the stuff he's doing, it's like, it's exciting. And I've eaten more Georgia Chain. I've eaten more steak in the last 2 months than I have in the last 3 years combined. Because I'm there all the time now. Because, you know, he's changing the menu to make it approachable for every day, right? Like Georgia James is an occasion spot. It's not cheap. And that's always been the thing that's been missing, is that you can't go there and go and, you know, sit at the bar and have a quick and inexpensive dinner. It wasn't super approachable in that sense. And our new chef has absolutely put items on the menu it's approachable now. You can go and have a full dinner and not break the bank every day.
Right. And we should say you have that great upstairs lounge space that's a little more casual with the rooftop and the fire pits, and you could sit inside or outside, and it feels different than the downstairs, more formal steakhouse experience.
Yeah, it's cool. We were able to take the upstairs and I mean, there's like little touches from the old 1100 Westheimer building that we brought with us, like the light fixtures and the big GJ. Like there are nods to where we came from up in the lounge, and the lounge is definitely a lot more casual. And what we've started to do, like we're moving in this direction now where we're definitely trying to brand it differently because it's a different experience. Yeah. You can't walk up there and expect the Georgia James experience because you're not going to have it. So now we have this separate menu. We have, you know, a $25 steak frites. Like you can go up there and have, or $28 steak frites au poivre. You can go up there and have a full steak dinner for $28. Like that's not something that you could ever have at Georgia James before. We have dollar oysters. We have happy hour. We have all these things now. Plus just a bunch of really cool menu items that are only available upstairs. We have live music on Thursdays and Fridays. So we're trying to brand it differently because that is a different experience. You're 100% right. It is a lot more casual. It's not the traditional Georgia James experience, which to me is super cool because that's one of the reasons why even working for the company, I didn't eat at Georgia James all that often because, you know, it's a whole big thing, you know? And sometimes I just want to go in, eat and get out. And that was difficult even for me to do at Georgia James. Now I can do that. And now that I can do that, I do it all the time.
Well, and Sarah, talk to me about kind of life at a steakhouse. Cause you know, you did work for these kind of smaller independent restaurants and quirky, fun wine bar. So, you know, when I think steakhouse, I think big red wines, California cabs, French, whatever, Bordeaux or whatever. But like, I also know that you have a very eclectic palate. So how do you sort of balance like giving the people what they want with being like, hey, here's this really cool thing that you didn't see coming, but it's going to be great with your meal?
It's honestly, it's something that I kind of honed in and trained myself to do at Light Years and then over into T-Rex. Is it honestly is just about reading the guests. I mean, everybody that works in this industry will tell you that. I can approach a table, have a very brief conversation with them, and know if, okay, this is what you drink, this is what you always get, there's not going to be kind of any sway, we have a conversation and all of those things, get them the wine they would like. Then I can kind of, it happened on Saturday night, had a table. They're like, we normally drink this, but you know, we're celebrating, maybe do something. And I was like, ah, boom, I can have a conversation with you. I can sway you to something that you've never had before. Cool. Tell me flavors. Tell me all the flavors that we like. And okay, cool. Have you ever had a Carignan from the Languedoc-Roussillon? Like, this is made by this weird dude who hunts and gathers during harvest and sleeps with the grapes and he's nuts. And like, but he makes really big, beautiful, stunning wines. I think you would really like that. And guess what? They love it so much. They got two bottles. So it's just kind of, and that's something again, that they really learned how to do at Light Years because we didn't have a menu. So it was like, okay, do you just want wine flavored wine or do you want to go on an adventure? And then honed it at T-Rex and now still get to execute it at Georgia James.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've said this before, but that conversation that you have with the sommelier where you go, okay, I really like this wine that you poured me, but now give me something that's sweeter, bolder, more tart, whatever. And then they bring you the thing and you go, yeah, that's what I had in my head. That's sorcery as far as I'm concerned. I love that.
Dude, she's a freaking genius with that. You know what? You know what's rad? And I'm going to blow her up for a second here just because it's super cool. So she'll talk to people, myself included, but she'll talk to people and she'll be like, oh, so what do you normally drink? Like, what's your cocktail of choice? What's your go-to when you're drinking spirits? And they'll tell her, and she's like, got it. And then she'll come back with the wine and she's like, try this. They're like, I almost said the F word and I didn't. Heck yeah, that's exactly what we're looking for. And she'll nail it, right? Like, so it's not just like, she does it not just with wine. She can do that because she'll ask them like what their cocktail is and she can figure out what they're going to dig just based on that. And I have yet to see her bring something out where somebody's like, no, man, you are so wrong. Like every single time they're like, heck yeah, this is really cool. I've never heard of it, but you know what? I'm going to drink this grape juice. Thank you.
Well, and let me just ask you, I mean, are you getting into wild oats at all now? I mean, now that.
So yes. So start changed up kind of the by the glass over there. And the thing with wild oats is, I mean, it's in one of those neighborhoods to where it's like 1 week we might have a wine heavy week. The next week they might do more margaritas. It's, you know, Spring Branch area. And it just kind of depends on the vibes for the week. But one thing that we just did is add to, because we're going into summer, we have two beautiful patios at Wild Oats in this great green space. It's bubble rosé time, light white wine. So we added a few kind of approachable bubbles and rosés and things like that onto the bottle list. So want to bring the kids and let them run in the green space and drink some bubs, then you can totes do that.
And what pairs
that was soccer mom. That was so let me translate for the people that don't speak suburban soccer mom. That means, hey, we have some wine that has bubbles in it and you're really going to like it.
And I love it.
Yeah. Fizzy and delicious.
Yeah. Right.
All right. What pairs with chicken fried steak?
Oh man. I mean, honestly,
my mouth pairs really well with that.
Well, with our chicken fried steak specifically, I mean, I would go Gamay all day, or I would honestly drink sparkling rosé with it. It would be really good with sparkling rosé.
All right. I will keep that pairing in mind for my next meal at Wild Oats. All right. So we have to talk about what I'm describing in my notes as the recent unpleasantness, the decision to close Pastore, but also there were a couple of personnel people behind the scenes who left kind of quietly at the same time, most prominently your culinary director, Scott Munns. So talk to me about the decision to close Pastore, because it was a restaurant that I really enjoyed. And I thought you were doing some cool stuff there. You had just gotten that, I mean, a pretty positive review from Allison Cook in the Chronicle. And I had kind of hoped that that was going to be like the kick in the pants that got people to give that place one more shot.
Man, I mean, you know, like that one was near and dear to my heart. Like I love that property. I loved everything about it. There's a lot of thought that went into the creation of it. And it was a heartbreaking decision to close it. But unfortunately, it never took off. Like it wasn't busy enough. Just period. It just wasn't. And you know, you're right. People did like it, just like you. Like they would come in and they're like, wow, the food's great. The service is awesome. This is a beautiful space. But they weren't coming back frequently enough. So regardless of how positive the experience was, they weren't coming back enough to sustain the business, you know, and for financial reasons, it was decided to shut it down. I think there's a few different things, you know, like, you know, no secret that we opened 4 restaurants within 5 months last year. And that is a really tough thing to do, and you saw firsthand, I was wiped, man. My life was nothing but opening restaurants for a long time. So beyond the the operational side of difficulty, there's also a financial strain that happens. It does take a minute for restaurants to get their footing. And it's one thing to have one restaurant getting their footing, but trying to do four restaurants to get their footing, there's an enormous financial strain that happens. It was not planned for this to happen the way it did. The openings were supposed to be over the course of 2 years, but between permitting and just the way of life, and God knows restaurant openings never go as planned, they all ended up falling the way they did, and it was financially not sustainable.
Yeah, Sarah, I mean, what do you want people to know about kind of the state of the company from your perspective? Because obviously, you know, you did bid farewell to a couple of people that you'd been working with really closely for the last several months, and I know that's never easy. So what is kind of your perspective on the state of the company after the closure and these changes?
It's funny, kind of circling back to when we were talking about Chris's departure and everybody kind of wanting this big, grand, you know, tea, drama, kind of gossipy thing. The amount of people when the article came out, I was actually on my way to Dallas with my oldest son for one of his competitions, and my phone blew up. And I have all these people that are like, oh my God, how are you okay? And people that I haven't spoken to, people that haven't come to visit me, and I'm like, you don't care. You just want the tea. Like, don't be disingenuous about this. Like, I honestly would have a little bit more respect for you if you just flat out went, hey girl, what's the tea? Don't be like, oh my God, this is so, like, we're adults here. Like, we're all big kids. And I think kind of dancing around anything and, you know, what's the spin and what's this and what, like, no, it wasn't working. And, you know, we're all restaurant professionals. A lot of us have read Danny Meyer's book. He says, don't pull from the ones that are good to keep the ones that aren't awake and alive. And if we had done that with Georgia James, then who knows, and started feeding into Fast Story Not Working, who knows what would have happened. And so this is purely smart business. And you know what? And it wasn't working, but you know what it does work really well as? An event space for Georgia James, because of the demand we have for that. The demand in the city alone for event spaces that can hold 30, 40, 50 people, the demand for that is very high. And that's what we are utilizing that space for. And it's working really well.
You know, I had years ago, one of my mentors said to me, he said, the best restaurateurs are the ones that know when to walk away. And, you know, it's the sunk cost fallacy. You have all of this emotion invested into something. You have all of this time invested into something, and you're like, oh, just one more thing, just right when we do this, or when this happens, or when this happens. And that can happen forever, the detriment of everything else. And that's why that decision was made, because we had to make the tough decision so that the other ones could continue to exist.
Right. This is the same sort of logic why I don't bet on sports, because it's like, oh, I missed that three-team parlay by 2 points on the over-under. It's like, I'll get it next time. It's like, no,
dude,
you won't.
Exactly. That's literally 14 years in Vegas. The one thing that I definitely learned is the house always wins. But more importantly, don't gamble, right? You chase it. You're chasing it. And that's exactly, you're 100% right. That's why people get stuck into that cycle of losing everything in Vegas, because they're like, oh, just one more. Oh, just one more, just one more. And it's like, you can't, you got to be able to recognize when you're losing and walk away.
And Sarah, I got to say, those are you okay text messages would be so much better from my perspective if they came with, hey, and I know a place that's hiring. If you're looking to jump ship, like, let me tell you about where the next gig is. That's when you know people are really worried about you.
Right.
So, you know, we've talked a little bit about Georgia James. We've talked a little bit about Wild Oats. We haven't really talked about Comalito. So from my perspective, I think that's the one that's exciting to me, because it makes, like, doing tacos in the farmer's market makes sense to me. And partnering with a guy like Luis Richards, who's very accomplished and knows his stuff, makes sense to me. And just giving Houston an outlet for that churro, mostly I'm just grateful. So
same.
So talk to me about kind of the current state of Comalito, because I know that it's been a little bit of a slow burn, right? You're still mostly doing kind of what I would call extended lunch hours, right? 11 to 6, I think, what, 6 days a week. So kind of what's the state of that restaurant and what are your aspirations for it?
Listen, I think that if you ask anybody in the company right now, we all probably eat there more than anywhere else. Any excuse we have, we're like, oh, meeting at the farmer's market, guys. So it is so well received. You've been there and food's great. The tortillas are epically good. The churro, if you are an atheist, you will believe in God after you eat the churro. You will thank the sugar gods.
I don't like sweets. Like, I am a notorious, like, the only, I make this joke all the time, the only place I eat dessert in town is Nancy's Hustle, because they're the perfect balance of sweets and savories, and they're amazing. I don't really touch sweets, but that churro, that's the only other place I'll eat dessert in town is at Comalito, because, oh my God.
Yeah, you're right. It is a slow burn. It's growing. The weekends are insanity and the restaurant is packed from open to close, but it's still, we're still slightly dependent on the business at the farmer's market. It's an outdoors. I mean, the restaurant is an outdoor, but farmer's market is. So even though you can go to our restaurant and the farmer's market and stay sheltered from the elements, people hear that word, farmer's market. And they automatically like, oh, you only go when it's nice outside. That's not the case. Like, you can actually go when it's raining. It's all covered. Yeah. So I think that, like, as people start to realize that, like, it's not just go out on a Saturday and hang out with the family, it's going to continue to grow. They're also doing a lot of really cool activations now at the farmer's market that are really, really beneficial. Like, like play dates for kids and live music and like all kinds of cool activations. So that's helping. And I think that it's currently very much a destination spot. I think that that will change. And as more things open within the farmer's market, I think that that's going to start to change more and more and more.
Yeah. And of course, Todd Mason, who's the principal for Underbelly Hospitality and the principal of the company that owns the farmer's market, he didn't buy that property and put all this money into it to transform it with the idea that, like, oh, if it doesn't work in 2 years, like, we're going to pack it in. Like, this is kind of a generational thing for him, right? I think he understands that people use that market in a certain way for a really long time. And it just takes a little bit to kind of get them to rethink how they use it. But at the same time, it's like pickleball is coming. I know there's
it's
some
here.
Other. Oh, it's there. Okay. Even
yeah,
better.
Yeah, it's open now. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's more like destination worthy stuff coming or that has recently opened, and it's crawfish season. So crawfish and noodles is cooking.
Seriously,
RC Ranch
by the way,
is doing good.
Insider tip on crawfish and noodles, like Bel Air will be packed. The wait won't be as bad at the farmer's market. That's the one, like, oh, Bel Air. Oh my God. What's my secret?
Keep that.
That's like when I want crawfish and noodle, I go to the one at the market because I don't have to wait for 4 hours. And I just let everybody know. So
right. But and it's Trong Nguyen is the guy who started crawfish and noodles, and he's at the Bel Air location, but his son Corey is running the Heights location. So it's all in the family. I mean, the standards are just as high.
Yep. And Corey does some cool stuff there too. Like, oh man, he was like doing, I go over and beg every once in a while, but he was doing this like really, really delicious bobas. Man, were they good. Like really, really good bobas. So he's always like changing up the menu and doing all kinds of cool stuff over there. And the turkey necks, oof, God, they're good.
All right. So we'll sort of wrap this up, but obviously you opened 4 restaurants in the last year. I assume you're ready for a little break from that, but what is kind of the future? What does the next 6 months or a year of Underbelly Hospitality look like from your perspective?
Stabilizing and just focusing on Georgia James and the lounge and really growing that business. That's a big one. That's like at the top of the list. And then just the other properties is stabilizing them and figuring like they're still new. We still have some iterations to go through till we really dial in exactly what it is that's going to work and what's wanted and what the demand is. The same thing goes like Comalito is really getting their footing. Wild Oats, opened up in December. We just did a bunch of menu changes there. The food is really, really good. But what we've realized is that neighborhood, they kind of want hay merchant food. So our chef over there, Fonzie, he's been with us for a million years. He was the sous chef, and running hay merchant. And he's bringing a lot of it back. He's bringing back the wings and the muffuletta, and like he's bringing back a bunch of the old hay merchant food because it just makes sense there, and that's what people want. So that's what they're getting, So we still have iterations and tweaking to go through until we dial in exactly the right sweet spot for what we're going to have and all the concepts. And that's what the next year is really focusing, spending time dialing it in and getting it right for where we're at now.
And Sarah, just kind of from your perspective, what are your goals for your end of things for the beverage programs at these restaurants?
It's the biggest one, obviously, like Georgia James is a, massive list and a big undertaking just alone. Something that we're focusing on within that space is honestly making the list a lot more approachable, not just price-wise, but also just kind of fun, making it less, having more fun varietals and more fun regions and things like that on there, featuring different things on our core event list that maybe you wouldn't typically get or think to order in a steakhouse, having more fun in that way, picking up wine education again, and also just kind of figuring out how this list flows, because a lot of what this list is, we have some old one-fifth things on there. We have some, old
I apologize to her because it's like let's clarify, it's not just old one-fifth things, it's five different concepts, five different styles, like because each concept had different types of wine, right? So like that's all been taken to Georgia
Georgia James. And so
Oh,
it's
so
this,
there's like one-fifth romance languages, like
yes, there's
weird
Underbelly, there's
Spanish
UV
wine.
Preserve,
oh
yes,
yeah oh yeah
Okay.
it's all there.
It's all on, and it's become this kind of like Franken
Amalgamation.
list of like, yeah, like, and there's stuff on there that I'm like, wow, cool, holy shit, that's a really awesome wine. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh, I bet you $10 Cridge bought that for UV Preserve. Like, one, and it's like, it's appeared here. In that, though,
It's cool.
it's cool because it's put this list in this really interesting place. I look at people all the time and I'm like, the Riesling list
Oh,
alone.
don't tell anybody.
Okay, folks.
Dang it.
It's
Oh, that's
cool.
my secret.
That is the only
Dang
secret.
it. J-Van at Nancy's
Nancy.
note, he know I am a junkie. I am a
She's
Riesling
a Riesling
junkie.
junkie.
And our Riesling list at GJ is
It's
legit.
legit. And it's like there's,
Inexpensive.
yeah. And like there's all these things that I'm like, oh, okay. And it's like this is,
Right?
it's fun. And
Yeah.
like having all of those things. And then also, staying true to, you gotta have your Napas, you gotta have your Rhones and all of these things, but finding a balance in between all of it, making it flow, making it make sense, and still having fun with it. One of the big focuses that we are focusing on list-wise is our champagne offerings. We want to have a badass champagne list, and that's, we're kind of building that out and fleshing that out and really being really mindful and thoughtful about the things that we put on there and kind of making it our big, strong focus on the list. And I'm very lucky, Molly Brown and Mr. Fremiat Rodriguez, who's also been with the Underbelly team
God, he's eight
for
years now, 7 years. Oh
forever.
my God.
And he's a wealth of knowledge, and he's like a
Wine savant.
savant. Like, it's wild. Like, so very lucky to have that team as the SOM team. And we all have, varying backgrounds, and but we all work really, really well together, and we want this wine program to be taken seriously, and I want to see people coming in there for it. that would be the day that someone comes in and is like, we came in because we heard you had a badass wine list. Like, that's, I can't wait.
And, you know, Sarah and the team have done such a stellar job of putting, you know, she brought up the Napa cabs, right? Like, as you know, and anybody who used to go, especially to the old 1100 building, we didn't really go super deep on the Napa cabs. We didn't go super deep on the, you know, on the typical standard steakhouse, California stuff. And Sarah's done a really cool job of bringing those in, and balancing out all the weird cool stuff that we have, and but not like selling out, right? Like, because we still want to be kind of cool and different. So she's done a great job of bringing all this stuff in that's a little bit more approachable for the people that are slightly intimidated by wine, but still keeping all of the geeky stuff, you know, that I'm like, ooh, about.
Well, and all right, here's where I potentially embarrass myself. So what do you take that Riesling and you pair it with what, like the roasted oysters and the fried chicken?
A5, baby.
Jesus, anything, frankly. I just crushed an amazing Riesling well, like a week and a half ago, and I drank it with my entire dinner. So it's great. Okay. I think right. People get really caught up with like the, oh, what do you drink this
what
with?
What do you drink? Yeah.
Who cares, man? Is it delicious? Put it in your mouth. That's it. Like, I think people get really hung up on that. I don't give a shit. Like, I'll drink. Sorry. Am I allowed to say that?
You're allowed.
Damn
you're
it.
Fine.
I love that you're so the one. Good. I love that you're the one that's worse
like,
than me.
I feel like it doesn't matter. If it's delicious, it's delicious. I will absolutely, like, if I'm feeling it, I'm like, yo, you know, pour me a Hungarian Tokaj, 5 Petunias, super, you know, high sugar. I will drink that. I don't care. Salad, great. Pour me a Tokaj. You know why? Because I feel like drinking one.
Well, that goes like the wine dinner that we just did a few weeks ago. We did it with Biacart Simone, historic, you know, champagne house. And we paired champagne with steak. You know, and everyone was blown away. Like, a lot of people were like, all right, we came to this dinner to see what steak in champagne is like. And it was, you know, they have a barrel aged champagne that they do that's beautiful, and it paired exceptionally. Yeah. Also, and we have another wine dinner coming up on Thursday the 18th with Robert Sinski himself. So that's another fun thing we're doing. All the wine dinners, all the wine events.
Yeah, that's something you've really embraced. I mean, that I've noticed that you're doing more and more of them.
Yeah, they're fun. I mean, it's such a fun way for, you know, Matt to experiment with food and cook different fun things, and for us to introduce guests to new and things that they typically might not drink, like the Biacart dinner. You know, here is champagne with your steak, and then for the Sinski dinner on the 18th, we're pouring orange wine.
Yeah,
let's do it. Let's show you orange wine in a steakhouse. I think that's fun. And then in May, for Oregon Wine Month, we're doing a huge Oregon wine tasting event with a bunch of different producers, and it'll be fun. I love the events. It's fun.
It is. And, you know, and the cool thing too about some of the wine dinners we're doing, it's like the Sinski dinner. This is the first one where we've actually paired up with a winemaker. A lot of the time, you know, Sarah's literally going into our cellar and picking the wine. So it's not like we decided to do Sinski because it made sense and it's fun and it's exciting. But really, like, she's just going in and being like, this bottle sounds great, and just pulls a bunch of really cool stuff out of our cellar. And then her and Matt work together to create a really dope menu for that. So it's not always just a single producer. Sometimes it's just special stuff that we have sitting in the cellar that we feel like sharing with people.
All right. Well, I have to say that does bring me to the end of my questions. Is there anything you want to discuss that I haven't asked you about?
What's your favorite color?
I mean, you're staring at it. You know,
blue and white. Blue.
Yeah, the blue walls and the blue car and the blue everything else. Yeah, but blue is my favorite.
Interesting. If any one singular thing, because you've been to all the restaurants, what's the one thing that, like, if you were only allowed to eat one thing from an Underbelly restaurant, what would that thing be?
Ooh, that is really hard. The cop-out answer is to just say a baller board, because then I get a little of everything.
You get everything.
Singular.
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I mean, it's like when One Fifth Steak opened, there was an uni panna cotta on the menu that doesn't exist anymore that was like crazy good. And like one of the most mind-blowing things I've ever had at a steakhouse. If price is no object and I'm going to Georgia James, that wood roasted king crab is like one of the most decadent, over the top, raw horsepower, delicious things anywhere in Houston. So that would be on the list. And I'm a wedge salad guy, and
Yes.
the slab is my favorite wedge in Houston. So, and I went to Andiron a while back, and the server goes, "We have the best wedge in Houston." And I go, "No, you don't. You just got to go down. Like, I love what you guys are doing, and I really like this restaurant, but the best wedge in Houston is like right down the street. And I bet if you go there and try it, you'll agree with me." He
It's
was
so
not,
good.
he did not think that was as funny as I did.
I've eaten that thing way more times than I like actually should admit to. It's kind of, it's because
Yeah.
it's so
I think
good.
that honestly, like for me, out of all the restaurants, it would either be the slab, the Viet Cajun, the churro, or the chicken fried steak. Those are like the four that are like that I think about, I dream about. Oh God, actually, I'm lying. You know what? That steak frites au
Yeah, I was
poivre
about to say,
that
like,
Matt put on the menu, I eat it at least once a week right now. So I think that might be my thing. Dude, that au poivre sauce, I will drink it. I'll put it in a bathtub. I'll take a bath in it and I will drink it. It is so good. You need
okay.
to come
Well,
try it.
I have not had that. I need to come in for that. All
You do.
right. Well, before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round. Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind.
We answer at the same time.
Well, you can take turns. I'll
Okay.
call on you. We'll keep this somewhat less chaotic than it has been up to now. Nina Quincy, what is your favorite ingredient?
Shallots.
Sarah Dowling, what is your favorite ingredient?
Garlic.
Sarah, what is the first band you ever saw in concert?
Stone Temple Pilots.
Nina, how about you?
Trick question. When I was with my parents, I saw a show, and then when I was solo, when I saw a show, which one do you want? First one by myself or first one with my parents?
Oh, give me the first one by yourself.
Metallica and Justice for All tour.
Nice. All right, Nina, what is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-through.
Cool. Oh man, fast food. Oh God, that's easy. Come on, we all know this one, Eric. I post about it every year. McRib. I will sell my child for a McRib. Are you kidding
Yeah.
Sarah, how about you?
I Sonic is the best fast food restaurant. I'm not taking any questions on that. It's a foot-long chili cheese dog with mustard and onions and a ocean water slush from Sonic.
Okay, and
All day.
then I think I'm gonna run into a I think I'm gonna run into a bad answer with this, but Nina, do you have a favorite athlete, professional, amateur?
Favorite athlete, does that mean like, by the way, so I'm not a sports person. So if I were to pick an athlete, I'm going purely on appearance, and that's David Beckham, and he's my boyfriend. Thank you.
Oh,
Okay.
that is a
No more
perfectly
questions,
acceptable
sir.
answer. Sarah, you get the real version of this question, which is, who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Oh, Craig Biggio. I've never been starstruck meeting people. I've met plenty of athletes, but I was like, when I was a kid, I wanted to grow up and be Craig Biggio. Like I'm obsessed with the Astros and weird and like, yes, Craig Biggio. Easy.
Okay. And then finally, what is the new Houston restaurant you haven't been to yet but are dying to try?
Have I been to it?
Well, oh yeah, you want to talk about pasta. You could say something
Yes,
nice
I
about
do.
pasta.
Of course, I do. It's the freaking best restaurant I've been to in a long, long time since the Loyalist in Chicago.
Oh, dude, the Loyalist is so good.
Oh, wait, what's that one? Actually, you posted pictures this last weekend that had me going, okay, you went to a Mexican restaurant.
Oh,
I
that one,
went to,
yes.
oh, Emma, the new cafe. It's right
That
down the
one,
street
yeah.
from it's right down the street from Comalita. You should go.
Yeah, that looks really good.
We should go. Okay.
Yeah, we talked about it on the Tuesday show quite a bit. So yes, it's the restaurant of the week. Chelsea Thomason from The Infatuation and I both had lots of nice things to say about Emma. It's very tasty.
Awesome.
All right. Give us the website, social media, plug whatever you want to plug at Underbelly Hospitality.
General website is underbellyhospitality.com. Georgia James Steak. Dude, we're pretty easy to find. Go online, Google Underbelly Hospitality. They will all pop up.
We have all the socials.
We do.
All of them. So many. Ladies, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, sir.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. This is your periodic reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I always appreciate your ratings and your feedback. But like Katie Nolan used to say, only if it's 5 stars and only if it's nice. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.